And a very warm welcome to the Kate Turkington Show. I'm Kate Turkington, and I'm very excited you're with me today because we have a very, very special guest. If you're a reader, and so many of us in South Africa are readers, you'll probably have heard a book just recently published. I'm going to show it to you, Watching Over Her by Jean Baptiste Andrea. It's a book you won't forget. You won't forget the title, Watching Over Her. It's actually published by Atlantic, but Jonathan Ball here in South Africa is distributing it. The minute you see it in a bookshop, snap it up, because it's already sold hundreds of thousands, and now it's coming to South Africa and globally for the first time. Watching Over Her by Jean-Baptiste Andrea. And joining me now from the south of France, the man himself, Jean-Baptiste Andrea. Bonjour, Jean-Baptiste.
Bonjour, Kate. Thanks for having me.
And just this book, you know, I have read thousands of books in my very long life. Your book, I really can say, is one of the most memorable I have ever read. At the moment, it's working its way through my family, and I can't wait for each one to finish so we can actually discuss it. What do I say it's about? It's about art, it's about history, it's about love, it's about passion, it's about politics, which makes it all sound very big and confusing. I promise you, it's a page turner. From the moment you read that first page, you will be hooked to the very end. And just one first question, Jean-Baptiste. I used to read French many moons ago. I'm not up to it now. But the translation seems to be absolutely brilliant. It's translated from French by, famous translator Frank Nguyen. You happy with the translation?
Yes, well, thank you for those kind words. They actually bring tears to my eyes. You know, it's the first time I actually have reaction to the English translation, because not many people have read it in English at that point in time. It's about to be released. I'm very happy with the translation. It's the only language I'm able to kind of check, and no, I wouldn't say supervise, because with such a talented translator, I don't have much to do. But, you know, we are able to discuss, and Frank was very open about suggestions. And I'm very happy with it. And I think the paradox is that English, well, I don't know if it's paradox, but it's actually not an easy translation, because there is a music in French which will be more easily reproduced in another Latin language, like Italian, for example. The kind of poetry that is in the book is more easily translated in some languages than others, and it's not easy for a translator to do justice to hopefully to what I did to the book in English. So I'm very, very happy with Frank's work. It's very impressive.
Because it's so beautifully written. It's so lyrical. I would go back and read whole paragraphs, whole sentences at a time. But I want to talk first about the two main characters, a man and a woman. Mimo is the man, and Viola. In English, sometimes we say Viola. In French, you say Viola. But these two main characters, are they the works of your imagination yet just, or were they based on anybody you knew?
No, they are. You know, the privilege of being a writer is that you can invent, you can make up things, you can imagine things. So that's what I do. I actually create characters out of the blue. Well, I say out of the blue, but obviously they will subconsciously probably be influenced by people I've met, but it is subconscious. You know, I don't intentionally choose to use some traits of people I know for my characters. So I kind of, I build them like I would from clay, just using my imagination. And then they become real to me. They become as real as any person I've ever known.
There's such a roller coaster of emotions in the book. Literally, one is on a total roller coaster. Were you affected emotionally when
Yes,
you
very much.
wrote it, or were you able to be the sort of observer?
No, I was very, very much affected by emotionally by writing the book, and it's actually I can't imagine another way of writing. I mean, if I'm not completely into the story, if I don't feel when I start writing and typing the actual text on my computer, if I don't feel that I'm kind of watching the story unfold in front of my eyes, if I feel some distance, then it's not going to be good for me. So I am, the paradox is that because this time it's a real paradox, is that I do create the story. I am the author. And at the same time, I become a reader and I become a spectator of that very same story. I very often feel, and I've said that times and times again, that I'm some kind of channel between a pre-existing story that is suddenly revealed to me, and it's up there somewhere in the cloud, and I've been chosen. I don't hear voices, but somehow I feel that I become passive at some point, and that I'm just a medium between that big cloud full of stories and the page, and my role is just to put down that story on the page and to do it justice and not interfere somehow, which is very, again, paradoxical because I did write that story and I am the author. But I think being emotionally involved in the story is very important to me, and I was, to be honest, and I hope it doesn't sound pretentious, but when I said that, but I cried in several places as I was writing it. And to this day, if I open a page in a particularly moving moment, I'd still cry. So, it to me, it means I've achieved what I wanted to do. The story doesn't belong to me anymore. It belongs to anybody who will open this book. And that's why I'm very moved by your words. It means that, yeah, I did. I succeeded in passing something that was important to me to you.
Do you know that I have interviewed so many authors, as I say, over a very long life. I have never, ever had one who told me he or she cried
Really?
while they were writing it.
No,
Now,
I
that's
can't be the only one. I can't be the only one.
that no, you can't be the only one, but for you're certainly a first for me. Now, Mimo and Viola. I'll come to their story. And just to tell everybody, there are more twists and turns in this book than the Minotaur's Maze or Hampton Court Maze, or just when you think you're somewhere, you're not. You're totally turned on your head and you're off in a different direction. But you set the book, Jean-Baptiste, during the early 20th century. I mean, it's about fascism, although that also sounds off-putting. No, it's just a background. It's about the history of the time. It's about art. It's about passion. But why that particular period of time?
I knew that I wanted to tell a story that would span over a whole lifetime, the lifetime of these characters. So I had a choice of, the book starts, it's not a spoiler, when the main character is on his deathbed. I had a choice of starting the book nowadays, and he's 82, so it takes me back to the 40s. Or I had the choice, as I'm doing, to start it in the late 1980s, and then the beginning of his life was obviously the beginning of the 20th century. And I thought it was maybe a less talked about already. Although, of course, it's talked about, but I felt like I liked it as a background. This is a book about tyranny. I mean, it's about fighting tyranny. These two guys, the Viola and Mimo, these two star-crossed friends, lovers. They're not lovers, but it's a beautiful love story. It's not a romance, you know. I've seen it advertised as a romance. I'm like, I think it's more complex than that. But I because they fight tyranny all the time, I thought this backdrop of fascism was a natural mirror of the everyday tyranny they fight. I thought everyday tyrants were exactly the same as huge monsters that became very unfortunately well-known political leaders and tyrants. So I think there was a natural it was a natural setting for that story. That small story went into our big history.
Now, you say a natural setting historically. The novel is set in Italy. You're French. Our hero was born in France, but you must know and love Italy so intimately because Italy is a character in the book.
Yes, well, everybody loves Italy. And I do particularly because my grandmother came from Italy to France in the 20s. You know, there were several waves of immigration, which actually started even as early as the 16th century from Italy to France. It was an economic migration. People needed jobs. There were issues with racism, and as a result, for example, when the generation of my grandparents, they moved to France, they did everything they could to make people forget they were Italian. And so Italy was kind of was not really passed on to me. I mean, it wasn't hidden. Yeah, we are from an Italian background, but I was never offered to learn the language. It wasn't talked about, and I developed some kind of frustration and even some form of fantasy about that amazing country. And on top of that, I live literally 60 kilometers. I'm less than 1 hour from the border. So I did go to Italy very early on, quite a lot, and that's where I discovered art and so yeah, I've always been fascinated by this country. For objective reasons, obviously the same reasons we all love Italy, but also for these personal reasons, which is my background. And I did want writing, setting this book in Italy was a way for me, I guess, to reconnect with my roots, because obviously the book, Italy is not the only country which has produced great art. I could have set it in France, could have set it in Germany and in many other countries, but there was this personal connection. I think this deep understanding of that country where I've been. So I was in Italy 2 weeks ago again. So I go there quite
And
often.
maybe there's some, this is going a bit woo-woo, but maybe there's some muscular memory
Yes,
or genetic
absolutely.
memory.
I believe I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is. Yeah. I mean, we're quite theatrical in the family. We're half of my family is from the other south, which is Spain for France, and then they came back to France through Algeria, and the other half, as we said, is from Italy. So it's all, I think, this theatricality. I realize I speak with my hands quite a lot. I'm going to try to keep them a bit quiet. I think it's there, yeah, in my genes somewhere. I like the idea.
Okay. And I have a question here. I mean, the novel is very poetic sometimes, and this is where Frank Nguyen, the translator, has really achieved so much because he's obviously turned your French lyricism into English lyricism. But the novel goes from monasteries to circuses to, it just goes all over the place in terms of locations. Again, was that a kind of deliberate? Did you plot all that in advance? Are you one of these authors who has like charts on the wall?
I worked for 20 years in filmmaking before I decided I needed to be myself and write my own stories without asking for anybody else's permission. And I remember when I started, I'd seen pictures of writers in their room with stuff on the wall. So then I started doing that too, because it looked cool, especially when I had never sold anything and people came to my place. Made me look like a writer. And then I realized that actually that's not the way I worked. I couldn't, my memory doesn't connect with the way I build structure, which is necessary for me. It doesn't connect with my eyes somehow. I'm not a visual guy in that respect. So I had all these papers on the wall, and all I saw were papers on the wall, not structure. So the answer is I do work a lot before I start the actual writing of the book on the structure, but I do not put anything on the wall. I just have a big notepad where I write the whole story. I think this phase is particularly important when you build a story. I did not, you know, I don't have a recipe. I don't think, hey, so that I have to have so many events, that many events to happen in within 15 minutes of reading. I don't care. But when I write, I suddenly get a feeling that, okay, maybe this is slow. Do I want it to be slow? If I want it to be slow, like the opening of the book, for example, could be disconcerting for some people because you don't quite know where you are. It takes about 50 pages for some people to get into the book and realize that it's actually all very simple. Some people dive in page one, but I knew the beginning was a bit slow. That was intentional. But sometimes, you know, I want to move on. I want to move forward. I want to jump forward. So I work a lot on the structure, and having my whole structure in front of me, I mean, in my notebook before I start writing the text, actually frees me. When I actually write what you read, this is written without thinking, because I put a lot of thinking in the structure. I am able to write the actual book without thinking, and I do three or four pages a day in a form of trance. Literally, I do not think, and I barely proofread what I've done. And when I finish the first draft, because I've put in so much work in the structure, even though I wrote it without thinking three or four pages a day, basically what you read today, the book that is printed that you showed earlier, is 90-95% identical to my first draft. So the thinking, the rational work for me goes into the structure, and the poetry and the freedom and the exciting phase of the writing is writing the actual text. And that's so there are two important phases for me when I write a book.
There's a template, but then a personal muse, as it were.
Yeah.
And you said the beginning of the book is very slow. My word, you get your first shock after about three or four pages. But it interests me, Jean-Baptiste, when you say, and I know you're a very successful screenwriter, so because so much of the book is so visual, you can visualize in your own mind, which is a great thing about reading. It's all in your head. I'm sure it's going to be a film. And those of you who are listening and watching, you probably want to hear more about the book. But I don't want any spoilers. I don't want to give you any spoilers because, as I said earlier to you, you're on a roller coaster when you read this book. Just when you think you've reached here, you're not. You're somewhere. So I don't want to talk too much about plot or whatever, just promising you that it's a page turner. It's totally page turner. So is it going to be a movie?
We have sold the rights, yes, to producers I have worked with in my film days. And we'll see what happens. I'm very excited because they're good people, these producers. And yeah, hopefully it's going to be a film. But I never ever, I think it's important to say that. I never ever wrote it thinking about making about movies. It's going to be a film, hopefully, but I'm not going to direct it. I do not want to be involved in the writing of the script. The best form I could give to that story was the form of the book. I wanted it to be a book. It is a book. If it becomes a film, great. I know it has the elements, but that was not a calculation. For me, it's always been a book.
It's interesting you say that because many authors I have spoken to say exactly what you say. A novel and a film, a movie, are two totally different genre, totally different genre. You just hope, like Sally Rooney, the Irish author, has been very, very lucky with her movie adaptations. You know, I don't know if you've read any of her first novel, Normal People, was a big international bestseller. And the critics actually said when they turned it into a TV series, the TV series was almost better than the book, and certainly the book, because so often we're disappointed. We've read the book, we've formed the characters in our own mind, and then we see somebody we think is totally inappropriate. But coming back to the book, you have won, and you're going to win so much more. You have won France's most prestigious literary prize, the Prix Goncourt, with this book. Were you surprised? Where were you when you heard about the prize?
Well, yes, I was very surprised. I was in Paris because basically the jury gathers. They've been doing so for 120 years. They gather in the same restaurant in Paris, Drouen, and they make the decision on the day. It was four of us in the final, and then they announce it just before the national news at 1 o'clock. So basically, every author, it's a bit cruel, but that's the way it is, has to be within 20 minutes of the restaurant, so that he or she can be there if he or his or her name is called. And because we hadn't heard from the jury, and it was getting quite close to that 1 o'clock cutoff time, we thought it cannot be us. And you know what? I was the outsider in on that year. Nobody believed in our chances. I mean, not many people. And we thought it wasn't us. So we actually opened a bottle of champagne and made a little speech celebrating our defeat and saying that was a nice run. You know, we've been lucky to reach that point. And then the call came. And my life changed, you know. I mean, it's in France, it's a very big deal.
I was actually going to ask you, has your life changed since winning? Those of you who aren't familiar with this prize, it's an enormous prize. It's the biggest literary prize, and I don't know in France, but sometimes, and I'm sure I've said this on air before, sometimes winners of prestigious literary prizes, and I take plucking it out of the air, the Booker Prize, for example, they're unreadable. They're almost unreadable, some of these books. This book of Jean-Baptiste Andrea, Watching Over Her, you'll have to put away a few evenings or a few days or weekend or whatever, because you're going to be stuck in this from the moment you open the first page. But did your life change?
Yes, you know, I've been fighting it ever since I was a child because to make people accept that I was going to be a writer, or maybe more simply to actually share my vision of the world. Okay, like this is the world I see. And I felt like most artists, by the way, before they enjoy success, I felt like nobody was listening and or even was even wanting to listen. And then literally not even overnight, it's like over 5 minutes, everybody was listening to me. Everybody was looking at me. Everybody was listening to me. Everybody wanted me to come to their place and their town and their theater and talk, which became a little bit ludicrous and excessive in another, exactly in the opposite direction. But yeah, I mean, again, because we are a country which celebrates literature, it is enormous. It is, I don't think there's any other country in the world where a literary prize generates such a level of stardom. You know, I had people recognizing me in the street overnight. So yeah, of course my life changed. But you know, I mean, I didn't change, hopefully. But it's like the world around me changed, yes.
I love that. Your life changed, but you didn't change.
No.
Now, obviously, I have to ask you, what's next? Is there something next, or are you going to metaphorically rest on your laurels for, and literally on your laurels for a while?
No, I mean, it's kind of in between. I don't want to rest on any laurels, and at the same time, I don't want to write a book that would feel unnecessary to me, and then it would also feel unnecessary to readers. You know, I mean, with every book, the Watching Over Her was my fourth novel. With every book, I try to go a little bit further and push the walls. And if I feel that somehow I can keep pushing the walls in one direction or the other, then I will do it. At the moment, I'm just resting a bit, not on my laurels, but it's more like I need a bit of quiet and peace and maybe find that direction. You know, I've learned very early on that you can't force ideas. So I'm waiting.
I think you should rest because the moment this book gets published, and we're lucky in South Africa, the minute this book gets published, you're going to be on those authors' tours. You're going to be in Australia, you're going to be in New Zealand, you're going, you know, it's so big. It is such a striking book. You're going to be travelling all over the world. And just one final question, Jean-Baptiste. What do you hope readers will get out of your book?
The only thing I can hope is that people are going to react like you did, which is also the way I reacted to that story, which is the reason I wrote it. Not everybody reacts to this book as you did. There is a, I was lucky enough that many people loved it or adored it and then found it immensely enjoyable and a page turner. But the best thing I can hope for is your reaction. Like people could not even, cannot even explain. Like actually, I can't explain why it moves me so much. This is my vision of the world. This is my vision of what being a human being on this planet is, looking for the light in the heart of darkness, because the light is always there if you fight hard enough to find it. This and the people who get that are very moved by this book. I had people come to me, open their mouth, and burst into tears, which in turn made me burst into tears. And they said, "I'm sorry, I can't explain why I love the book." I said, "I understand because I can't explain it either. All I could do was write it." Again, I really hope it doesn't sound pretentious. It's just a story that was very dear to my heart. I could not write that story. And when I was in the midst of writing, I remember stopping and thinking, "Nobody's going to read this book. This is too personal." As you said, there is history, there is politics, there is this great relationship, this relationship at the heart of the book between these two guys, which has some strong personal elements and bits of relationships I've had with people over the years. Again, it's fictitious, but it was very powerful for me, very moving, but I can't explain it. So best I can hope for is that, you know, people will react like you did and get the book. There are many levels of I was about to say understanding. That's not the right word. There's nothing to understand. It's a resonance. There is something to be felt in this book, and I hope people will feel it.
Jean-Philippe, I can't imagine not anybody reacting to this book the way I have. It's a detective story. It's a love story. It's, I say, it's art. It's passion. I think it's absolutely breathtaking. But there you are. Thank you so much for being with us today. And when you come to South Africa, I hope to sip a glass of Prosecco or something wonderful.
I would love you. To, Kate. I would love to. And thank you so much.
Thank you so, so, so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
And just showing you the book again. This has got so many reviews on. Wonderful, breathtaking. I've never been so impressed by a novel, an authentic masterpiece, something so special. The accolades just go on and on, but you're going to see for yourselves. Okay, that's all. As I always say to you, we're not getting round to travel today. We'll get round to travel probably next time. But if you're going anywhere at all, even if you're going to work or going to bed, travel safely, look after yourselves and look after others too.